You'll sing a song, and I'll sing a song, and we'll sing a song together. You'll sing a song, and I'll sing a song, in warm or wintry weather.
It's the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey, and this is Ella Jenkins. She was arguably the most important and influential American children's musician of the last century, and she spent most of her life here in Illinois, in Chicago. Jenkins died just last year at the age of 100, and now she's the subject of a new biography. It's called This Is Rhythm, Ella Jenkins, Children's Music, and the Long Civil Rights Movement. The author is Gail Wald, who's a professor of American Studies at the George Washington University. Gail Wald joins us now. Welcome to the 21st Show.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Listeners, you can join us as always at 800-222-9455. Do you remember listening to the music of Ella Jenkins when you were a child? Or maybe you played it for your children or grandchildren or students. Maybe you were even lucky enough to hear a performance by Jenkins at your school. 800-222-9455 is the number. That's 800-222-9455. All right, Gail Wald, let's start with talking about the world into which Ella Jenkins is born and raised.
Sure. Ella Jenkins was a product of the Great Migration of African Americans from the South to various cities all over the United States. In her case, she was born in St. Louis to parents from Alabama and Mississippi, but spent most of her life from the age of two in Chicago. She grew up on the south side of Chicago in the neighborhood then known as Bronzeville, still known as Bronzeville. It was a segregated neighborhood. It was an incredibly crowded neighborhood. There were a lot of African Americans moving in there in the first decades of the century. But it was a culturally lively place to be. And Ella Jenkins grew up hearing all kinds of sounds in that neighborhood, church sounds, secular sounds, the sounds of radio and records that would become a part of her music later on.
Yeah, this is the Black metropolis. Some have referred to that era. And
exactly.
What is her upbringing like from a musical standpoint?
You know, Ella Jenkins grew up poor. Her mother was a domestic servant. And so she didn't have access to things like piano lessons. And for most of her childhood, Ella didn't consider herself someone who was a musician because she associated that with kids who had access to instruments and lessons. But she didn't consider herself a musician, and yet she would love to sit by her beloved Uncle Flood, who was a Mississippi migrant, who played harmonica to relax after work at the steel mills. And Ella learned the way that a lot of people learn, which is that she watched her uncle eventually her uncle would give her a harmonica and she would try out the harmonica. And that's how she learned. So she grew up playing harmonica, but not thinking of herself quite as a musician. That would change later on, although, you know, she really was quite self-invented. And the first music that she ever played publicly was actually African hand drums, conga drum in particular, that she took up when she was living in San Francisco in the 1940s and 1950s. It was very, very rare, exceedingly rare for a woman to be playing those drums, which were really associated with male players at that point. But that was, a lot of people know her because she went on to play and record with a baritone ukulele, kind of looks like a small guitar, but actually drums and harmonica were her first instruments.
Talk about her education, especially as it compares to other people from her, you know, who shared some of her background.
Yeah, you know, she was lucky to grew up at a time when, you know, she had a solid education through high school, and then she put herself through college. You know, I don't have to tell listeners that how unusual that was for women who were graduating high school in the 1940s. She started in junior college, And then transferred eventually to earn her degree from San Francisco State College, then it was, in sociology and a new field called recreation, which I think we would think of now as a little bit like a combination of kind of recreation, but also social work. It had a kind of component of serving the community and community organizing. So she was entirely self-made. And when she came back to Chicago after getting her degree, and she started making music with teenagers, she called herself a rhythm specialist. She didn't even really conceptualize herself as a children's musician because it didn't exist per se. That wasn't a job title. So she made up a title for herself called a rhythm specialist. So, which was quite audacious for someone to do, to kind of call themselves a specialist in something that, you couldn't get a degree in, but that's what she did.
Yeah, what does that mean for those of us who, who are not there at that time and place? What did it mean for her? Yeah.
Yeah, it's a great question. I think what she was trying to figure out a way to communicate to people what she did. And really what was at the bottom of what she did, she wasn't primarily a performer for people. She was a performer with people. And so rhythm specialist was a way of not only giving herself authority as a woman who played African-derived instruments and to insist on the musical importance and sophistication of rhythm and music, but also rhythm specialist was a way of putting herself out there as a new kind of professional who could actually bring people together through collective music making. So, although Ella Jenkins performed from stages, that was never her ambition to be a performer who was separated from her audience. It was always about getting people involved in rhythm and getting people involved in music together.
Let's listen to a clip of her teaching. This is in later life. This is a workshop at Chicago's Old Town School of Folk Music, 2009. I gather this was teaching other music teachers. She's playing the harmonica. She has someone else playing a limberjack dancer, which is a small puppet on a tambourine.
Very
I call it a limbertoid dancer, but some people call it a limberjack. Okay. Sometimes when you have this, and if you have a fairly small group, pass it around for each of the children to take a turn. And it's not who has the best rhythm or who has this and that, it's that each one has a different rhythm.
All right, that video is from the Smithsonian Institution. Gailwald, talk about what that says to you about her teaching style.
Yeah, that's perfect what she says at the end to the other teachers. Pass this around. It's not about who's going to be great at it. It's about everyone having a turn and everyone having a different rhythm. That's really central to her philosophy, and it's central to the way that she imagined music as having an impact in the world. Music wasn't just about music. Music was about bringing people together, about creating communities, about learning to share, and about learning how to be comfortable with difference. Everyone sings differently. Everyone keeps time differently. But being together means learning how to be comfortable with each other's rhythms. So that was exactly, you see, it's not about, she could play virtuosically, but it wasn't about showing what she could do. It was about inviting people in.
So we talked about how she had this education, and I should remind listeners, this is the 21st show. We are talking about Ella Jenkins, who was a legend in the world of children's music. She just died last year at the age of 100, and she's the subject of a new biography by Gailwald. It's called This Is Rhythm, Ella Jenkins, Children's Music and the Long Civil Rights Movement. We'll get to that a little later in the conversation. 800-222-9455 if you want to join us today, if you have a question or comment about this. 800-222-9455. So we talked about her education being in recreation, which is has a social work component to that. She starts out working with children. How does she begin to bring music into that work?
So music was her conduit to children rather than the other way around. When Ella returned from college back to Chicago, she got a job at the YWCA on the South Side, and her job was as teenage program director. So basically, how to keep teenagers occupied after school. And one of the things that was important to her was giving Black children tools to kind of recognize African American culture. This is in the 50s when people are not necessarily talking about African heritage. So she started a rhythm club, a Latin American rhythm club, and a percussion club and dance clubs. So she used, so by taking advantage of young people's interest in Latin rhythms. This is a time when people are interested in mambo and, early cha-cha music. And so it's dance music for kids, for teenagers. She takes advantage of that interest to kind of teach them about histories of Black diasporic music. So that's kind of where she gets started. At the same time in the 50s, she becomes a fixture in the burgeoning Chicago folk world. When the Gate of Horn, which is the kind of legendary Chicago folk club, opens, she's right there. She's right there when the Old Town School of Folk Music opens. And there was a point in her career when she had the opportunity to become like a nightclub artist. Albert Grossman, who was the one of the co-founders of the Gate of Horn nightclub, would go on in the early 60s very famously to become Bob Dylan's manager, and he put together Peter, Paul, and Mary. This is Albert Grossman. Albert Grossman saw Ella Jenkins' charisma as a performer, and he said, "Let me make you a star." And in the late 50s, mid to late 50s, she said, "No, I don't want that kind of life. I'm going to go a different direction." And Albert Grossman cursed her and said, "You're never going to make a penny." And he was wrong about that. She, in fact, had a very sustainable career as an independent musician. So it's not that she went looking for children, it's that children emerged as, I think, what she saw as a kind of unserved audience. She was also interested in children because she used to say, "Children don't care how old you are, how fat or skinny you are. They don't care what color you are." And so I think she understood because she saw friends in the music business, including her good friend Odetta, and Ella was a great admirer of Billie Holiday and met her a couple of times. And she knew what the music business could do to Black women in terms of kind of chewing them up, exhausting them, etc. And she didn't want that kind of life. And so when she pivoted away from perhaps, having a career as a performer for adults, she found children a welcoming audience and an audience where she could devote herself to using music to further a social good, which she felt that she couldn't do in a nightclub. She loved all kinds of music, but that wasn't what she was going to do.
What have you come to understand about why she was so gifted at connecting with children?
This is like the $10,000 question. I think that, and everyone who's met her, and I met her for the first time when she was 92, and in assisted living, and even 92 and in her late 90s, that charisma was there. I think that Ella never talked down to children. She wasn't afraid of children. When a child was before her, that child was a full human being. And getting to know her while I was working on this book, it became clear to me in a way I had never thought about it. Well, adults, even those of us who have kids, are often just afraid of kids. We feel uncomfortable talking to them. We talk to them in exaggerated voices. Ella didn't do any of that. She got right down to a kid's level, and kids somehow knew this. They just sensed it intuitively, and that really endeared her to children. And I think adults loved her, particularly people who were in later on in her career in the 60s and 70s in early childhood education, because she gave teachers, you heard that in the clip, strategies for things to do in a classroom, particularly with music, even if they weren't quote unquote musical themselves. She really empowered teachers to bring rhythm and song into classrooms and modeled how to get the attention of children. It was amazing. When kids were around Ella, they never misbehaved. There's a kind of gift to that. Like, how did, other teachers would say, how did she do that?
How does she do that?
So it was a kind
Absolutely.
of magic.
Yeah. All right. Let me remind listeners, we're talking with Gail Wald, the author of a new biography of Ella Jenkins. It's called This Is Rhythm, Ella Jenkins, Children's Music, and the Long Civil Rights Movement. We are going to continue this conversation after a short break. This is the 21st Show.
Another man done gone. Another man done gone. Another man done gone. Another man done gone. He had a long chain on. 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 They killed another man. Another man done gone. 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 Another man. They'll never catch him. He's gone. Did you feed my cow?
Yes, ma'am.
Could you tell me how?
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, what did you feed her?
Corn and hay.
Oh, what did you feed her?
Corn and hay.
Did you milk her good?
Yes, ma'am.
Did you milk her like you should?
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, how did you milk her?
Swish, swish, swish.
How did you milk her?
Swish, swish, swish.
Did my cow get sick?
Yes, ma'am.
Was she covered with tick?
Yes, ma'am.
Well, how did she die? How did she die? Did the buzzards come?
Yes, ma'am.
Or did the buzzards come?
Yes, ma'am.
Well, how did he come?
Flop, flop, flop.
How did he come?
Flop, flop, flop. Flop, flop, flop.
It's the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. That was Ella Jenkins. The late Chicago folk singer is the subject of a new biography called This Is Rhythm, Ella Jenkins, Children's Music, and the Long Civil Rights Movement. The author is Gail Wald, professor of American Studies at George Washington University. You can join us today at 800-222-9455, 800-222-9455. And let's go now to the phones, where Jessica is calling from Richmond. Jessica, thank you for calling in.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Just calling because I was surprised to hear Ella Jenkins come up on the radio on the way to pick my daughter up from preschool, and my little one perked up. Oh, we know that song. I just want to say, yeah, it's so cute. I just want to say that, her music is alive and well in our house and really touching to me and part of, our family generational story, because my grandmother was a social worker and an early childhood educator and folk singer in Chicago. And she passed a couple years ago, but in going through her folk music note cards that she kept on little 4x6 note cards in a recipe box, I found, songs like One Potato, Two Potato, that she must have gleaned from Ella Jenkins in her songbook or her Smithsonian Folkways albums, and with the rhythm and rhythm sticks and One Potato, Two Potato, and the call and response songs. She had handwritten those out and cataloged those for her work with children in the Head Start program that she started, and her continued work in Chicago with what was at the time called Traveler's Aid.
Yeah.
So I'm really looking forward to reading the book. And anyway, appreciate you guys in this story and can't wait to re-listen to the whole thing with more focus.
All right. Thank you so much, Jessica. I really appreciate that call and sharing some of your family story. Gail Wald, I'll just turn it over to you to see if you have any reaction to that.
Yeah, I just love that story. Thank you so much, Jessica, for sharing it. I think that piece about intergenerational transmission of Ella's music is so on point. There are grandparents who give the music to their children, who then give the music to their children. And there's also the story about, you know, kind of the ways that she spoke to educators in the classroom. One of the interesting things, the caller mentioned Head Start. And one of the interesting things I found out when researching the book is just the ways that Ella Jenkins anticipated the rise of early childhood education. When she started out, the field itself was kind of inchoate. It was still in formation. A lot of people didn't send their children to, you know, what we would think of today as preschool, because it was assumed that staying home with a mother was the best thing. And there were only really certain women, certain families who sent their kids to school with the idea that that early childhood, you know, 3 to 6 was a particularly important time for children to learn. When federally funded programs like Head Start emerged, Ella's music was there to meet the occasion. She had already intuited the ways that children could learn about many things through music. They learned about geography. They learned about the names of the trees. They learned about, she had a whole song about what did your milkman bring you? So things that we're comfortable with today, the idea that those early years are so important for children's later development, she really anticipated.
Indeed, it reminds me a lot of, you know, the movement Taking Children Seriously, or the Montessori movement, and that's where I was first introduced to her music, is through a Montessori primary program that used it in one of her songs in one of their programs. Let's talk, though, about her civil rights activism. You say that her career posed the question, what does civil rights sound like for children? Before the last break, we heard that song, Another Man, Done Gone. Talk about how she went about answering that question.
Yeah, and thank you for the question. So when I wanted the civil rights movement to be kind of in the title of the book, for a couple of reasons. One is that as a Black woman kind of coming out of Bronzeville in the 20s and 30s, Ella Jenkins' life was in some ways shaped by the modern civil rights movement. She did all of the things that we associate with movement activism, starting in the late 40s when she was even in high school. She joined the Chicago chapter of CORE, the Congress of Racial Equality. She did sit-ins with C.T. Vivian downstate in places like Peoria. She marched with King, etc. So she did all of those things that we think of as activism. But she eventually decided that activism was not going to be her professional, you know, something that she did primarily. And so one of the arguments that the book makes is that she brought that activism into her work as a musician educator. And she approached work with children always as a way of teaching them about the world that the civil rights movement and other social justice movements that were important to her, like the women's movement, for example. She always used the music as a way of opening children's, even planting seeds really in children. So for example, Another Man Done Gone, that's a chain gang song. A lot of the work that she does comes out of folk tradition, oral tradition. It's a chain gang song that was recorded by ethnographers originally. Odetta, the folk singer Odetta, popularized a version of it in the 50s, and Ella adapted it for her very first album, which came out in 1957, called Call and Response Rhythmic Group Singing. The idea that you would put a chain gang song on your first children's album is not, in 1957, is not self-evident. But that was a way of Ella gently, not in a way that was going to overwhelm children, but gently introducing notions of the history of slavery and then the history of post-slavery. The chain gang persists. So I think she treated children as capable of understanding things in the world. She was always deeply respectful of, you know, keeping them safe. So it was never about kind of overwhelming them. And so I think she saw making the world a better place, teaching children to respect differences, making them curious about other people rather than in other places, instead of fearful of others, learning how to share and learning how to tolerate difference. Those were ways that she translated some of the precepts of the civil rights movement into her work.
Let's hear another short excerpt from one of her songs. This is called A Friendly Loan.
If you've got money troubles, just like my very own, walk right down the street and get yourself a friendly loan. Yes, you can get a friendly loan. You don't have to write. Why, you don't even have to phone. If you've got good credit, you can get a friendly loan. Yes, you can get yourself a friendly loan. Well, now you can get lots of cash and you can get it right away. But, buddy, you're in trouble if you miss that payment day. So stop all your worrying, you don't have to moan.
All right, the social commentary is strong there. Hopefully people can grasp the irony behind the cheerful sound. Gail Wald, what was Ella Jenkins' experience of the many challenges that came with being Black and American in the mid-20th century?
Yeah, you know, I think one of the first questions I ever asked Ella was about traveling, because she was a traveler, a national traveler and a world traveler, and she was constantly performing over a career of 60 years or so. And so, particularly, you know, before the 1970s, but even after, traveling around the country as a Black woman could be dangerous, and it could be inconvenient or more. So, for example, in the early 60s, she contracted with a group that put on school assemblies. It was called the School Assembly Service, and they provided assemblies to middle schools and high schools throughout Illinois and other states. And she would show up at a school. She was the person contracted to do the show. She would give her performance, but she wouldn't have a hotel she could stay in always. She wouldn't necessarily find a restaurant that would serve her. So, you know, she experienced the kinds of things that actually performers in other genres, you know, we know this from the blues women, from gospel performers, from rhythm and blues performers in the 50s, exactly the same kinds of things that they had to worry about, particularly not only when they were traveling in the South, but all around the country. So she experienced things like that all the time.
We're short on time. There's more we could talk about, and I'll just refer people to the book for that. Her, you know, basically sustaining Folkways recordings before it was acquired by the Smithsonian. One thing I do want to ask you about, though, is Bernadelle Richter. To the extent you can do it justice in a brief amount of time, tell me about her and their relationship.
Well, Bernadelle Richter and Ella Jenkins met in 1961, and they became life partners. And Bernadelle eventually became Ella's manager. You know, Ella, one of the things that's remarkable and a really inspiring story about Ella is Ella was a musician who really had a great deal of control over her career. Mo Ash, who was the head of Folkways, gave her a lot of latitude in terms of when she recorded, what she recorded, her liner notes, the cover of her albums. And she also had a partner in life who was supportive of her work. And so she was able to make a comfortable living as an independent artist, which is really hard to imagine. It's very difficult right now, but her story is really a story of ownership of her career. And Bernadelle, as a partner and as a manager, was incredibly important to that. A Friendly Loan, the song you heard that you played earlier, was partly a satire based on and the difficulties of getting a loan.
All right, just about less than a minute remaining. I guess briefly, if you have to make the case, you know, people think of 20th century children's musicians. The names Pete Seeger, Woody Guthrie are often at the top of the list. Make the case for why they should be second to Ella Jenkins.
So Pete Seeger and Woody Guthrie, all respect, but they weren't primarily interested in children. Ella Jenkins was the first person
Okay, we seem to have lost our connection to Gail Wald there. I'm sorry about that, but I want to thank her for spending so much time with us and telling us about her book about Ella Jenkins, which is called This Is Rhythm, Ella Jenkins, Children's Music and the Long Civil Rights Movement. We are going to leave you today with another song from Ella Jenkins and Friends.
This train is bound for glory. This train is bound for glory. This train is bound for glory. Children, get on board. No more weeping and a wailing. No more weeping and a wailing. No more weeping and a wailing. Children, get on board. This train is bound for glory.
This train is bound for glory.
Once again, the book is This Is Rhythm, Ella Jenkins, Children's Music, and the Long Civil Rights Movement. Thanks to Gail Wald for sharing it with us today on The 21st Show. Coming up tomorrow, it's Juneteenth, National Independence Day, when we commemorate the freeing of some of the last enslaved African Americans at the end of the Civil War. We'll hear about efforts to recognize sites of black history in southern Illinois. That includes a Union Civil War camp in Cairo, which once hosted as many as 5,000 freed men and women, plus how black migration changed American society. You can visit our website, 21stshow.org. There you can sign up for our text messaging group. You can also find our email address to let us know what you think about today's show or suggest future topics. The address, again, is 21stshow.org. We've got our past programs there, and you can find links to subscribe to our podcasts or look us up on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen. The 21st Show is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening. We'll talk with you again tomorrow.
Bound for freedom, this train is bound.